Welcome to the Local Spotlight Show here at WJBM Studios in Jerseyville, Illinois, the voice of the Tri-Counties. Before I introduce my next guest today, I'd like to remind you to check out our webpage, wjbmradio.com. You can stream the station to your phone or any smart device through MyTuner or Riverbender app, and even Alexa. Additionally, our past Spotlight shows are available as well. Just go to Listen On Demand. And for my guest today, I have Sean Isringhausen. Welcome, Sean. I almost call you your brother.
It's Scott.
Oh, it's Scott. All right. Well, I get it right.
Well, you got one of the two. I don't know if it's the better one or the worst one.
How many brothers are there?
I just have one.
Just one. Any sisters?
Just me and Sean. No sisters.
No sisters. Just the two of you.
Just the two of us.
How far apart are you guys in age?
We're about 3.5 years.
Are you?
Yep.
You guys pretty close?
We are pretty close, yes.
That's good. I'm close with my brother and brothers when Matt. You remember my brother, Matt?
I do.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah, we were really close for sure.
Nope, sure do.
Scott is the urban fishing coordinator of southern part of Illinois.
That is correct.
And how long have you been doing this?
Well, the urban fishing part I've been doing for about 14, maybe 15 years, but I used to work as the naturalist at Pere Marquette State Park and been employed by the DNR for 35 or 36 years. So I've been involved in the outdoor world for quite some time.
So have you always been an outdoorsman?
I've always been in the outdoors, always liked to hunt, always liked to fish, and always been kind of like to be out in the woods and nature for sure.
Well, I know you grew up here in Jersey.
I did.
Yeah. Did you go to college?
I did go to college. I started out at Lewis and Clark College, and then I went to Western Illinois University and graduated with an agriculture business degree. So
okay.
That's kind of my background, and I know you know my brother Sean pretty well. And,
oh, yeah, he's...
You know, grew up and we, you know, kind of farmed and helped my dad and brother farm a little bit, not nearly involved in as I used to be, but yeah, I've always been kind of an outdoors person for sure.
And you kind of head up the programs that go on. Now, you're actually in the building right next to Pere Marquette State Park, right? As you go up on the left-hand side?
I am, and that's the visitor center. That's the newer visitor center that was constructed in 1997. But yes, that's the building that I'm in.
Okay, and you're the head honcho there. You run that whole operation?
Well, really not. I don't run the. I'm really not involved with. I'm not actually employed by the park. I'm employed by actually fisheries. I'm a fisheries person now, and you probably maybe know our superintendent Nate Gett, and he's the one that's actually in charge of the.
Okay,
of the Pere Marquette State Park.
Yeah, I know Nate well. Yeah. So what is your job as the fishery department?
Well, I'm in charge of the urban fishing program for Southern Illinois, which encompasses 38 counties in Southern Illinois, from a little bit north of here to Indiana to the extreme southern tip of Illinois. And my job truly is to get especially kids, but other people as well, kind of hooked on the outdoors and hooked on fishing. So I do a lot of fishing and wildlife programs and presentations throughout the southern part of the state. I get involved in big events like the state fairs, the Tourist Family Fishing Fair at Pere Marquette State Park. A couple days I'm going to be in Southern Illinois doing a big event down there near Marion, Illinois. So I kind of travel quite a bit.
Yeah,
and do quite a bit of outdoor education
stuff.
Yeah,
it sounds like it. Yeah, so I mean, I didn't know any better, but I just thought you pretty much just were stationed right around the park there, but you go all over the place.
I really do. I travel quite a bit for sure. And the state fairs, I'm involved in both the state fairs, Springfield and DuCoin State Fair, especially DuCoin.
I know you have that big fishing fair. Is that in the summer?
It is.
Yeah, I know that's a big deal.
It is June 7th next year, so I'll go ahead and have everybody put it on their calendars for sure.
And you have a big turnout for that, don't you?
We typically do, yes, or we have for a long time.
Now, do you do events like that at other places around the state?
There's really nothing quite like that in the whole state of Illinois, but I do get involved in some pretty large events, and that's the kinds of things that I'm not necessarily in charge of, but I am involved in a lot of big events like that. You know, coming up in January is the Collinsville Boat Show, which is coming up, where I'm going to have a big pond that I'm important in there and actually let the kids actually catch fish inside the boat show. So I get involved in a lot of things like that for sure.
How many guys do you have helping you with all this stuff?
Well, it just kind of depends on the event, to be honest with you.
But you have access. You can say, hey, I need some fellas over here.
Sometimes I do. Usually I can get some help for these things. And I'm more, sometimes I'm in an assistance role as well. But, you know, going back to the fishing fair, it'll take about 250 volunteers. And just to plug out to the people from the Jersey County area that have helped me in years in the past, just a big thank you for that as well. So I do get involved in a lot of big events, and I do have a lot of help to make these things happen.
And while you're on the air, if somebody wants to get involved, if they want to volunteer, they can contact you, and I'm sure you'd let them help.
Nope, for sure. We're always looking for people to help with a lot of different things, for sure.
Well, we got a list of things that we want to cover today, talk about, and kind of educate our listeners on. And let's talk about the first thing, the leaves. The leaves haven't turned yet, and I know you can explain why, but, you know, usually by now they're turning.
They really are. You know, getting into the latter part of, you know, October, you know, tends to be the peak time. And, you know, we discussed off the air, you know, 20 years ago, Columbus Day weekend, there was a lot of color. I don't think Columbus Day weekend there was any color this year. So,
yeah. I mean, they are starting to turn right now. I can notice.
They are.
You know, they're starting to. But, and the reason, can you explain what happened or what's going on?
Well, a couple of reasons. Number one, you've probably seen a soybean field when it turns, like as the days get shorter and the nights get longer, then the chlorophyll starts being less and less produced, so then the colors change. So that's really why they change, is because of the length of the day. But what has affected this so much is, number one, we've had this drought, and the leaves are kind of trying to hang on. But more important than that, we've had this warm weather, and we just haven't had the ideal conditions really to make the leaves change like we've had in the past. Or what really makes the leaves change is warm, sunshiny days, cool nights without a frost or a freeze. I know we've had a little bit of a frost, but I don't think we've had a killer, you know, freeze yet. You know, as youngsters, our mom and dad's always told us, we got to get a freeze to make the leaves change. And that's really just the worst thing that can happen, because that kills the leaves and makes them turn brown. But going back to the real reason is really just this weather. It's so much different than what it has been, you know, years ago. You know, the coolness hasn't really happened yet.
You know, just thinking about it, the fact that it's prolonged as far as the leaves turning, lengthened the tourism for seeing the leaf?
I think it does, and it makes it come later. But I think, you know, people have been coming, you know, to the park for a couple of weeks expecting leaf season, but it has, yes. I mean, and it's going to continue. And, you know, if something drastic doesn't happen, I think it's going to be the 5th, maybe the 8th of November is when we're going to have our peak of our leaves, which, you know, that seems pretty late, really, to be honest with you.
Okay, when we have our peak, then how much longer do we usually have of color?
Oh, we'll have a week or 10 days of color for sure. Now, you know, you're getting into November, we could have, you know, a bunch of wind and a bunch of rain and some freezes, and it could end real quick, too. I mean, it's hard to tell, you know, for sure what's going to happen as far as the forecast. But if everything stays ideal, you know, you'll have a good week after they peak for sure and still be really pretty for sure. They are starting to change now, but, I mean, they're not changing real fast.
You know, we're pretty fortunate to have Pierre Marquette State Park right in our backyard, you know. When did it actually occur? What happened? How did it begin?
Well, it started, it was some people had got together to try to dream up of this park. And you mentioned the Joe Page. I think he was definitely, I know he was involved in it, because I've got some information on that as well. But the original purchase was in 1931, $25,000 for 2,605 acres. And we discussed off the air, the original name was actually not Pierre Marquette State Park, but it's called Piesell Bluff State Park, but in changed in honor of Father Marquette, which was the first European to enter we now call Illinois.
All right. So the original purchase of what, 2,000 some acres?
2,605 acres for $25,000.
That's a good buy on that one.
That wouldn't be, I can maybe even pay for that.
Yeah.
So, might take me 2 years to get it paid off, but I'd try.
And now how many acres are involved in the park?
Over 8,000. I mean, it was 8,050. We've added some small parcels, but I guess in thinking back a little bit, we've also added a big area called Copperhead Hollow, or Copperhead Holler, kind of depending on where you're from. But anyway, it's about 1,100 or 1,200 acres. It doesn't join the park, but it is still part of the park. So, you know, we sometimes will get, you know, definitely be over 9,000 acres if you count that part in the park for sure.
Now, all the things that the park offers, you know, everybody, I think they kind of know that they have the restaurant there and they have accommodations, nice accommodations. But what are some of the other things that Pier Marquette has that people might not know about?
We talked about the visitor center a while ago, which is the visitor center is really nice. It has some really neat displays and exhibits in it. We have the educational fishing pond, which is right next to the visitor center. So kids can come with their moms and dads and catch a fish. It is all catch and release, but I guarantee if you come into that pond, you're going to catch a fish. We have beautiful, beautiful hiking trails. We have 11 miles of hiking trails. We have a stables in the park. If you like to ride horses, we have an area which you can actually bring your horses in as well. We have very, very nice campgrounds. We have tent camping as well as an electric area. You can put a tent in or put an RV in. We also have group camps way up in the upper area of the park. We have a rock climbing rappelling area. If anybody likes to rappel or climb, you can do that. Located on the Illinois River, so boating, hunting, fishing activities take place on the river, so there's really a lot to do. And the greatest thing about this, you can kind of stay at the park, but again, we have Grafton, which is only about 4 or 5 miles away, so we have all the things in Grafton, all the touristy things you can do in there as well, which I know you're real familiar with your family and a lot of the things that they have there as well.
Oh, yeah. I was there last weekend. It was crazy there. It was so busy. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if people realize all that you can do there, you know? I mean, it's super. But tell me a little bit, because it's kind of just piqued my interest, not that I want to do it by any means, but this rappelling and climbing, rock climbing, where is that located at?
Do you know where the Brussels Ferry is? You probably do.
Yeah.
Just a little bit past, which would be down rivers, or coming from the parks part or from the lodge, you'll see a gate to your left.
Yeah.
And it's up on the bluff right there. And we got the cleats and everything are in the rocks. So it's a pretty popular area and people do use it. We have a lot of rock climbing groups, especially that come from the St. Louis area that come to the rock climbing area at Pier Marquette. And
do you use it for free?
Or
do you
it is free. It is free.
Okay, you just got
to have
your
bring your own equipment. It is
do you
free.
Have to sign off or anything?
You used to have to do that, but now you do not. No,
I'll be darned. Yeah, have you ever did it yet?
I have not. I'm not. I got to keep my feet on the ground.
Let's see. And then, if you're just joining us, I have Scott Esringhausen with me. He's the urban fishing coordinator of Southern Illinois. He's located right there at Pier Marquette State Park. Now. One thing you got coming up, Friday, November 1st, you were talking about this. This is pretty cool.
It is pretty neat, and I've been doing it for quite some time. But we have a fishing program. We mentioned the fishing, which that's my biggest part of my job, which is fishing. But at 5:30 in the evening, I'm going to do a short little talk on fishing and a little bit about water safety and casting and hook safety and a little bit about fish ID. I'll have the urban fishing trail there as well for everyone to kind of walk through and look. But
this is Friday night, November 1st.
It is. It's 5:30 in the evening. Yes.
Okay.
So it is in the evening time.
Is this kind of geared toward youngsters?
The part of it is more towards youngsters. Now, the owl part that we'll talk about in a minute or two is that I have people there that are way older than me that come to it and have been coming for quite some time.
Okay. All right. I'm going to let you go on. So at the beginning of it...
The beginning of it is just fishing, and it really is more for fish. You know, and the greatest thing about this pond, which I don't know if you've seen it before or not, but it's catch and release, and I'm going to say a 99% chance that every kid that comes to that pond is going to catch a fish, which is, you know, if you've never had a kid catch a fish, it's such a great opportunity to get them hooked on the fishing for sure.
Yeah. So they get a fish for how long?
We fish from 5:30 to about 7:15.
Uh-huh.
So for a while. Now, I'll do a little talk in the beginning, which may be a 15-minute kind of little program before they start. So basically 6:15 till about 7:15. So they can fish for that long. And all the bait, the poles, and we use cane poles, which are actually native cane in Illinois. I've cut the cane in southern Illinois and made homemade cane poles, kind of like the old timers would have fished with. So that's what we fish with.
That's really cool.
So pretty neat. And they can walk through the trailer. If you've never seen the trailer, it's got all kinds of fish species in it and exhibits for people to look at.
Okay. And then we get on, what's next after that?
The next thing, we'll meet inside the visitor center at 7:30. I'll do a program on the 8 different species of owls. I have all 8 species taxidermy. Included in that will be a video. People will get to touch a real owl wing, get to see some neat exhibits on owls. After that part of the program, which will be about at 8:30,
yeah,
this is when the fun starts.
Yeah, I've been waiting for this.
Then we actually take a 2-mile guided hike up through the park. Now, just so everyone knows, the first half a mile of it is pretty steep. I will stop about 5 or 6 times during the program. It heals my mouth as well as a tape recorder, and we'll try to call what we call the bard owl, which that's the one that makes the hooting sound. And I have a person who has a tape recorder that kind of go ahead of me a little bit, so we simulate what it's like to sound like a couple owls. We'll have everybody get totally quiet. I ask that everybody brings 1 flashlight per family. I will stop about 5 or 6 times, and we'll try to call these owls. And we did do a program about 3 weeks ago, and we heard at one stop 3 or 4 owls, and they got real close to us. Now, these are wild owls, so again, there's definitely no guarantee that we're going to hear them, but more times than not, we do hear some owls. But again, no guarantees. But then after that, we meet at that little log cabin, which is right by the pond where the fishing part was, and we'll have a bonfire there, and we'll roast marshmallows and hot dogs at the fire. And it's 100% free, the drinks and the hot dogs and everything's are provided. But it's a really neat program.
Just remember, it's
going to last a long time. It will not get done until probably 10:30, 11, maybe 11:30 at night.
Okay. Well, that does sound. And how long have you been doing this?
A long time. Definitely over 30 years I've done the owl program.
I'll be darned. Yeah, that does sound fun. Now, give me a little info. I mean, I want to take away your whole story there Friday night, but give us a little info on owls, how owls are important to the
They control rodents and, you know, small game populations, and you know, they kind of keep the nature in balance. But you know people are amazed at some of the things that the owls eat. For instance, the great horned owl, which is a real common owl, yeah, one of their favorite foods is skunks. They love to eat skunks.
They do. I'll be darned.
Their eyesight is, you know, superb. They can see in the daytime as well as the night. Their hearing is also great. They can hear a mouse break a twig as much as 75 feet away. So there's a lot of neat things to learn, for sure.
Now, has the owls ever been hunted? Is it against the law to kill an owl?
In the United States, it's 100% illegal, yes.
Yeah,
any bird of prey, your hawks, your eagles, your owls, you cannot kill any of them, for sure. But there's been times, yeah. I mean, think about Halloween, which is coming up before long. If you've ever knew this before, but whenever owls fly, they fly almost 100% silently. So the early people thought they were associated with witches or ghosts, and they were very scared of the owl, so, and being so nocturnal. But then in some other countries, like rural India, if an owl would hoot, supposedly a villager was going to die
in
a short period of time. And then the ancient Greeks had just the opposite belief of the owl. You probably see how owls look so human-like in appearance with their eyes in the fronts of their heads.
Yeah.
And they thought that owls were related to like you and I. So they would make totem poles of owls and wear necklaces with owls. But there's a lot of old folklore about the owl, for sure.
Yeah. Hey, let's talk about the eagles a little bit.
Sure.
Because that's going to be coming up in winter. What goes on with the eagles?
That is. And we already got the dates already set. And if anybody's interested, November 15th is when we start taking reservations. But we'll do programs in December, January, and most of them in February. But we are starting to see eagles. We have been seeing some eagles year-round. We're starting to see more that's already starting to come into the area.
What's that program like? What happens there with the eagle program?
That program, they start at 8:30 in the morning. You do have to make a reservation. I'll start kind of like the owl program. I'll do about an hour indoor informative program. From there, we drive into many different areas and locations. We start out at the Swan Lake Division of the Two Rivers National Wildlife Refuge. We get to see an active eagle's nest, and included in that will be a stop at the Brussels Ferry, which is a great place to look for the eagles. Depending on what day, a lot of times we go to the Two Rivers Wildlife Refuge office, make our way up to the town of Hardin. We will eat lunch at a restaurant someplace in the Hardin area. And then after that, we look for eagles. We go up into the Goder Island area and make our way eventually across the Campsville Ferry and get back to the park at about 3 to 3:30 in the afternoon. But There's never been a program that I haven't seen an eagle. And you know, I tell everybody to dress for the weather, bring a pair of binoculars, a camera, and no guarantee that we're going to get a real close look at an eagle. But again, most times we do. And I also have a really nice spotting scope that I make sure that everybody gets to see the nest as well as the eagles through the spotting scope.
There are plenty of eagles out there, aren't there?
There's a lot of eagles, and we're starting to see more and more eagles, which are here year-round, which you've probably witnessed that as too.
Yes, yes. Well, Scott, do you have anything else we want to throw in this interview? We're about to run out of time.
No, just if there's anyone interested that would truly like a teacher or a school group or a scout group or just an adult group that would like to learn more about fishing or wildlife, if you want to give me a call at the park, you can sure do that at 618-786-3323. And for the owl program, or if you just want an update on the leaves, again, use that number for anything that you need to ask for. And if you want to ask for me, that's fine. I'm not there a whole lot, but you can sure ask for me.
So the number again?
618-786-3323.
All right. Well, thanks for coming in. It's been a pleasure.
Well, thank you for having me here. I sure appreciate it.
Take care.